From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin, and here are your current sports headlines on this September 30th, 2013. Well, the Lions and Bears, Reggie Bush's 37-yard touchdown run helped Detroit score 27 points in the second quarter alone, and he accounted for 173 yards of offense to help the Lions beat the Chicago Bears 40-32 on Sunday. Detroit is now 3-1. They moved into first place tie with Chicago in the NFC North. The Lions scored 24 straight points, three TDs, in a span of 3 minutes. Can you believe that? 26 seconds. 3 minutes and 26 seconds to be exact. Now, after Matt Forte's 53-yard touchdown run gave the Bears a 10-6 lead early in the second quarter. Le'Veon Bell, the struggling Steelers, found at least one bright spot in yesterday's loss to the Vikings. Rookie running back Le'Veon Bell, now the former Michigan State star, ran for two touchdowns in his NFL debut at Wembley Stadium. An 8-yard touchdown run in the first quarter cut the Vikings' lead to 10-7. And was the first of Bell's career. Now, he added a 1-yard touchdown in the third to cut the Vikings' lead to 3 before the Steelers ultimately fell short in the final minute. Bell finished with 57 yards and 2 touchdowns on 16 carries. The Tigers, as they celebrate their AL Central clinch, they concluded their season in a 3-game series against the Marlins. And got swept with low scores. Now, the Tigers lost 3-2 in the first game, 2-1 in the second game, and 1-0 shutout in third. Now, in the final game of the 3-game series, Marlins pitcher Henderson Alvarez threw a no-hitter in 9 innings against the Tigers to conclude regular season play. The Marlins run came off a Luke Pukkinen breaking ball that went to the backstop in the 9th inning. Now, they went on to win 1-0. 1-0. Now, the last time the Tigers were no-hit was July 26, 2010, when Tampa Bay's Matt Garza beat them 5-0. All right, MSU and Bama update. Michigan State accepted Alabama's request to cancel a home-and-home series in 2016 and 2017 last week because the Crimson Tide administration had expressed a desire to move one of the games to a neutral site. Now, a source with knowledge of contracts involved told MLive that it's possible that Michigan State had not agreed to Alabama's request to cancel the home-and-home football series, the Tide might never have stepped foot in East Lansing, instead opting to buy out the second game in 2017 after hosting the Spartans in Tuscaloosa in 2016. Now, one of the major reasons Michigan State wanted to play Alabama was to bring the Crimson Tide to Spartan Stadium, and it will do as part of a home-and-home series with Oregon that begins next season in Eugene. Now, former Michigan State and current Alabama coach Nick Saban discussed on his radio show last week how the Tide is more interested in neutral site games moving forward than home-and-home series. All right, Jack Wallace. Now, it has come out that irritated parents were a factor in the firing of former Okemos head football coach Jack Wallace. Now, it is being said that Wallace was forced out. Now, Wallace had a losing season last year and started off this season. They have started off 0-5 this season. Now, the Chieftains lost to Lansing Sexton this past Friday. They wore the initials JW on their jerseys, and after the game, held up 3 fingers in the shape of a W in honor of Wallace. Now, Wallace teaches at Folliver High School and is a Hall of Fame football coach. The Lane Kiffin era at USC is finally over. Fresh off a 62-41 drubbing at the hands of Arizona State, Kiffin was fired as USC's head coach when the team returned to Los Angeles. Kiffin, who amassed a 28-15 record at USC, reportedly had a 45-minute meeting with AD Pat Haddon to try and keep his job, but his on-field performance outweighed his last-minute negotiations. The NFL Finals looks to be changing its format. Now, the NBA is mulling over a possible new NBA Finals format that could return to the 2-2-1-1-1 format. Now, the league's competition committee voted unanimously to recommend the change from the current 2-3-2 system, and owners will vote on it next month at their owners' meetings. Now, if approved, it hasn't been decided if the change will begin with the 2014 Finals. All other rounds in the playoffs are they use the 2-2-1-1-1 format. Spoelstra, the Miami Heat, have at least one piece of their championship puzzle locked down for the foreseeable future. Head coach Eric Spoelstra heading into the final year of his contract, the longtime assistant turned two-time NBA champion, has signed a multi-year extension with the club. Spoelstra is 260-134 in his five seasons on the sideline and a 50-29 record in the playoffs, including the past two championships, and has the respect of both his players and management, obviously, right? Jimmy Johnson won the AAA 400 at Dover International Speedway this weekend. Johnson achieved a record eighth win at Dover, breaking a tie between Richard Petty and Bob Allison. Johnson is now just 8 points behind Kenseth and showed he's in form. Now, this was his first win since Daytona in July. Well, those are your current sports headlines for this September 30th, 2013. If you want to comment on any of those, give us a call at 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. We're also going to take your calls today on thoughts on the Detroit Lions. Were you shocked about their blowout over the Bears? Just give us your thoughts on that game, thoughts on the season, thoughts on this incredible team right now. 517-355-9527. And we're going to dive into it right now. I'm joined by Matt Luckey and Alex Sharg as we dive into that Lions win. And I tell you what, guys, this Lions team, they definitely surprised me. I was not expecting a blowout. They came out fully focused. And Reggie Bush, he just continues to impress me every time he steps on the gridiron. Again, he had 18 carries for 139 yards, one touchdown. That's an average, folks, of 7.7 yards per carry from Reggie Bush. 7 yards per carry, Reggie Bush's performance yesterday. Unbelievable. Now, granted, Jay Cutler did help out that Lions defense. He had a few just terrible turnovers throughout that game. So far, Cutler has thrown 6 interceptions this season. Now, 2 against Minnesota, 1 against Cincy. I mean, the Steelers, I mean, they've been so bad this season. He threw none against the Steelers, but Cutler has just been really, really bad as far as turning the ball over. And there was one play where he just lofted it up. I think it was the second quarter, but just lofted it up and just hands the Lions interception there. Cutler definitely helped out that Lions defense. Ndamukong Suh was great yesterday. He had 4 tackles, 2 sacks. 3 sacks total for the Lions, and 2 of them coming from Ndamukong Suh. He was great. A lot of speed off that line. I believe he had 1 sack that led to a fumble, and Nick Fairley picked the ball up and scored a touchdown. That defensive line was great. Matthew Stafford, he wasn't great, but he was good yesterday. That's something I can say all season so far for Matthew Stafford. He was 23 for 35 for 242 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. And I tell you what, on the ground, for this Lions team, definitely help them. Because if you look at this, looking at the receiving core, you had Calvin, Megatron, of course, playing that game. But Calvin didn't even lead this team in receptions throughout the entire game. And you would think he would now that, you know, Nate Burleson, you know, and he decided to eat some pizza that day and decided to, you know, break his arm. You would think that Calvin would be the guy that day. But he didn't really need to because you had guys like, you know, Reggie Bush stepping up. Reggie Bush was just, I mean, again, I can't even give him as much praise as he really needs and deserves because he was spectacular. But when you have success on the ground like Reggie Bush had, it puts a lot of pressure off of those receivers. If you look at yesterday, Chris Durham led receivers. Chris Durham of all people led receivers. He had 3 receptions for 58 yards. And then second is Brandon Pettigrew. Mr. Pettigrew is in second place with 7 receptions for 54 yards. Again, that just goes to show that when you got a running game, it definitely, you know, relaxes those receivers. They don't have to do much, to be honest with you. And that was the case of that yesterday, guys. What'd you see?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty darn impressive. The second quarter, aside from the Forte run, was probably the best I've ever seen the Lions play in all facets. Spurlock had a huge punt return that set up the first touchdown, and then it just kind of snowballed. But like you were saying, Pettigrew played well, and the Lions were just attacking everywhere. They owned the flats at the beginning. They kept throwing these quick little screens or just flat routes to Pettigrew or to Johnson, because if you have Calvin blocking, nobody's gonna shake him.
Yeah, he's a wall.
He's going to take care of his man. And that opened up the flats, which then they could just give Reggie Bush the ball right up the gut, and he would make a play. seemingly every time. They were just gashing them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was actually in attendance at the game. It was
incredibly
fun.
Oh, man, you're lucky.
And, yeah, I mean, just sitting amongst Chicago fans after Forte's run, you know, started talking trash, and then just the pendulum swung back the other way like 10 times fold.
So it, start talking some trash back at him, I
assume, you know,
right?
your chest starts puffing out a little bit more, definitely. But, you know, and then you look up at the score, and it's 30-13, and it's just like, wow. Yeah. They just exploded.
How was the energy, since you were there, how was the energy whenever Reggie Bush would have the ball in his
hand? Oh, there were several Reggie chants just every time. And, you know, he had the one run where he fumbled, and Calvin saved him and scooped it up.
And then the next play,
he has, like, the best run I think we've seen since Barry Sanders here.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, that run, just looking at that run alone, 37 yards. I mean, Reggie jumps over a defender. And, you know, normally what sticks out to me with Reggie – normally, when you jump over the defender, I mean, you kind of slow down. You got to kind of compose yourself. But it seemed as though what makes Reggie Bush special is because he's so explosive. After he jumps over the defender, he speeds up. His speed increased after he hit the ground, almost as an acceleration point after he hit the ground. It was unbelievable.
And he's, like, juking right and then just takes off and hurdles the guy.
Yeah.
And it's just like you know, you can't teach that. Aaron was saying it before the show.
Right.
And you can't. The guy is a special player.
He is.
And with him and Calvin, it's just pick your poison, basically.
Right. And you know, I think he's starting to really – we're starting to see Reggie Bush blossom. Because let's be honest here. You know, before he got to Detroit, I mean, there were question marks. A lot of question marks about Reggie Bush. You know, that Heisman winner that we saw when he was in college kind of dwindled off once he entered the NFL. But now, I mean, I think the Detroit Lions are – you know, he works very well when – he's getting the ball, one, when he's the main guy as running back, which wasn't the case in many instances before he got to Detroit. And two, when he's playing in that flat route and actually getting receptions and able to explode that well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, almost as a receiver. He plays well in that form, and that's what Detroit is using him as, and he's starting to really blossom, and we're starting to see the Reggie Bush that everyone really expected of him coming out of college. He was great, though, yesterday. I mean, he was unbelievable. Alex, you got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, everything what you guys said has been pretty on par. And there's one thing that I kind of want to point out is you look at Cutler's performance and you see the three picks, right? And you're like, okay.
And they were bad picks. They were gimmies.
Was Cutler really that bad, or did the Lions step up to the occasion?
Well, I think it's a mix of both,
mm-hmm.
to be honest with you.
And to get the mix of both, how about the play of Glover Quinn?
I mean,
he's fourth in the league in interceptions throughout four games. And that snatch, I mean, yeah, he kind of lobbed it up, but, I mean, Glover went from the other side of the field to intercept that.
I think my grandma could have went from the other side and intercepted. That was so bad. I mean, he lofts it up.
It was odd. It was odd.
Yeah. It almost makes you think, you know, a friend of mine who's from Chicago, he's a huge, huge Bears fan. He tweets, is Cutler throwing this game after that interception happened? Because it looked – I mean, he just throws it up there. No chance of the ball getting to the receiver. I don't know. I don't know. But –
But also, did any of you see the failed chest bump from Farrelly?
Oh, that was so funny. Yeah, after Ndamukong Suh.
Suh was great, but Farrelly had a better chest bump at the Grammys.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. Yeah, after Farrelly scores and put that touchdown after the sack, yeah, on the sidelines. Did you see him? Did they show it at the game?
Oh, they showed it. He got a nice reaction from the crowd.
That was so funny. But yeah, I mean, right now, so this Lions team, they're currently tied in the division with the Chicago Bears. And yeah, what really surprised me, though, was the way, you know, that game went, because nobody was expecting the blowout. I mean,
no.
The Chicago Bears, they came into this one undefeated. And it looked a little rocky to start. Like you said, when they took that lead, I'm sitting there like, okay, what are the Lions going to do? And, you know, Matthew Stafford, he overthrew a couple receivers. A few guys dropped some balls here and there. And it looked a little rocky at the start, but all of a sudden, I mean, it turned around really quickly for this team. And, you know, it definitely turned some heads in the world of football, because now I think people are saying, okay, this Lions team is really serious. I think a lot of people across the nation knew this team was good, but after seeing how the Lions handled the Bears yesterday, now people are really looking at the Lions saying, okay, this team is really serious, I think.
Yeah, and they should be. And the biggest thing, Alex hinted at it with Quinn's play, Delmas was great, too.
Yeah,
he had two picks. He was flying all over the field like he normally is. And the thing with him is if he can stay healthy. But, man, when he's in there, you know, the secondary was the biggest weakness of the team last year.
Right.
And now with Quinn, with Delmas healthy, it's a strength. And that paired with the D-line, and they were getting after it. Suh was so good. I mean,
he
you know,
great,
his stat line's great, but it didn't speak to the things that he was doing on every play. He was –
He was everywhere.
He was blowing plays up on a regular basis, and he is, you know, he gets so much flack for the, you know, the flare-ups of aggression and you know, stomping guys and stuff like that. But, man, the
dude is
one of the best in the business,
he is.
Easily.
He's so, if he, and, you know, looking at, you know, when they showed that chest bump Alex on the sideline, and I rewinded it because that was so funny. I rewinded it on my DVR and watched it again. And I'm just looking at Sue. I mean, he's so big, you know what I mean, and athletic. I mean, the guy does not look like he has an inch of fat on him. I mean, it looks
right.
All muscle
oh, yeah.
when you look at Ndamukong Suh. And he's so explosive off the line. Again, he was spectacular. He had four tackles, two sacks. Again, one of those sacks led to that Nick Fairley run in, which was pretty cool. But, yeah, Ndamukong Suh, that entire defense showed out. And I think they needed to show out that game against a team like the Bears to show that, hey, we're serious. And, you know, you go back to, you know, all the flack that Ndamukong Suh catches for, you know, his on the field antics, if you will.
Right.
And you know what? Like, I'll go back to it. I'll say it again. I think that's a good thing for this team because I think a lot of quarterbacks that they, you know, when they enter a game against the Lions, they kind of have second thoughts that, hey, you know, I'm going against Ndamukong Suh this Sunday.
I mean,
I better, you know, watch my back. And I think that's a good thing for the psyche of this Lions team.
Yeah, it might have had something to do with why Jay Cutler decided to float up a, you know, a fade route
right.
a second into the play. You know,
right.
It's just like you knock him around a few times. He clearly looked rattled. I mean, and
yeah.
Who wouldn't be? Because, you know, you talk about Sue and how big and strong he is, and Fairley's even bigger.
Right.
So it's
yeah.
like,
it's a monstrous
oh boy.
Line.
Those guys together, they can run the trenches. They can dominate the trenches against anybody.
Right, right. I totally agree. And I tell you what, looking at Ndamukong Suh, like I said, I think he's definitely giving quarterbacks nightmares on Saturday nights. And that definitely plays in the Lions' favor. In other news in the NFL, did you guys look at the NFC East right now? The NFC East is really alarming to me when you look at it because these teams are just, well, with the exception of one, which you can say is average, I guess, at best. The Cowboys actually lead that division at 2-2. Then you have the Philadelphia Eagles in second place, tied for second place, I should say, at 1-3 with the Washington Redskins. And you got the Giants, who are 0-4, who still have a legitimate chance at 0-4 of possibly making some noise in the NFC East. Guys, I don't even know if the NFC East deserves a playoff team looking at it right now. It's just bad. That really stuck out to me. Again, the Cowboys, they lead that division at 2-2, which I'm not complaining about because I'm a Cowboys fan. I'm an inner Cowboys fan. But, man, they are just bad. And how about Peyton Manning? I like I said last week, Peyton Manning is the best quarterback in the league in my eyes. I mean, he's doing things. It's not even close. Every time the Denver Broncos hit the field, it's not even close. You know Peyton Manning's going out there. He looks so relaxed. He's just picking apart each and every defense that he faces. It's not even fun for defense anymore. I mean, it's just complete blowouts. Complete blowouts. And he's looking as good as I've ever seen. He's looking, you know, back to the John Elway days, I can say. You know, if I had to equate this, what he's doing right now, to a quarterback that I've seen that was just like, wow. You know, it's just really just my jaws on the floor. Peyton Manning is on that level right now, probably maybe even better than Elway right now. I don't know. He's that good. I don't know. Would you guys agree with that? Peyton is the guy right now? I don't know.
Absolutely. I mean, people were worried about Von Miller being suspended 6 games. Doesn't even matter. They're
no.
scoring 50 points a game. Like, you know, they could run out a high school team on defense, and they'd still probably win a majority of their games just because of how good the offense is. He's got weapons everywhere.
Right.
And, you know, he's the best guy as far as just picking apart a defense. Like you said, he knows where to go with the ball. He's on the same page as his receivers. They look unstoppable.
Unstoppable. Right now, they're definitely my Super Bowl pick if I had to choose right now. And I believe there were two occasions in one quarter where Peyton sat back and went for 80-plus yards for touchdowns. Just picking. And I think Brian Kelly had an interesting comment after that game when I was reading up on that game. And Brian Kelly was just sitting there, you know, kind of, you know, back in the day when Jordan used to play, the opposition used to look at Michael Jordan when he used to play on the court and just kind of get caught up as a fan watching Peyton Manning. I mean, Brian Kelly had a quote where he was just like looking at Peyton Manning on some of those plays like, wow, Peyton, that was a good play. You can look up that quote. It was pretty funny. I mean, anytime you got the head coach of another team looking at you saying, oh, my gosh, that guy's pretty good. Looking at the guy as a fan almost, that's saying a lot. You know what I mean? That's saying a ton. So right now, Denver right now, they're actually tied in the AFC West with Kansas City at 4-0. So Denver and Kansas City are both 4-0 right now. The Chargers are 2-2, and the Oakland Raiders, they're 1-3, sitting in last place in that division. And Matt, right now, I believe we're in a pretty heated battle. Well, not you. You're sitting pretty right now. Me and Alex could be doing a duet. If something, you just explain it to our listeners.
Yeah, right. I'm sitting comfortably in victory lane. Feels great. Month treated me well, you know. But we had a tight race for last. I don't, you know.
Uh-huh.
Alex and Al, you guys were tied going into Sunday Night Football last night. Al took the Patriots. Alex took the Falcons. Of course, the Patriots won. So, Al, you are up 1 point right now.
Okay.
But since it is still September, we didn't know what these games would be last week when we did the picks. We are going to do a special edition, last-minute edition.
Special edition here.
Tonight's game 163, the play-in game for the AL.
Mm-hmm.
Tampa Bay Rays at the Texas Rangers. This is for all the marbles. This is for saving yourself some serious embarrassment, Al.
Right.
You're taking a risk.
I'm taking a risk because I didn't even have to agree with this. Alex, I'm actually doing you a favor.
You're too kind.
I did not even have to do this.
Well, you know
what I said? No, I haven't sung yet.
You did have to do this.
No, I didn't.
It's in the month of September still.
No, there's no clause because we said last week
everything in the month of September is what we agreed on.
No, we said last week that we will end it. We will end it on Friday and say, okay, whoever is last on Monday morning would have to sing. But I'm such a nice guy.
Okay.
I'm such a nice guy here.
So generous.
I'm so generous. I said, you know what? I'm going to give Alex a shot. And, you know, we're going to make this pick. So I'm going to go. And you have to go against me because it wouldn't make sense,
of course.
I'm going to go. Is Texas at home?
Texas is at home.
I'm going with the – give me the Rangers.
Okay. You know what I'm taking.
Of course, you got to go with the Rays.
Okay. And I'm going to take – who cares? Because I'm already winning and I –
it doesn't matter what
for fun, I'm going to take the Rangers too, but I won't even give myself a point for that.
Gotcha. This is going to be very interesting. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. All right, we have a caller on line one. Kirk from Grand Lynch. How you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
Hey, how are you?
Great. How you doing, bud?
Hey, I heard you guys talking about the Lions game. I just want to point out a couple of plays that people may have missed that really could have been very important. Well, the one was important because it made the game close. They both were plays by Joey Bell.
Yeah.
The one that made the game close was his fumble, where he was trying to get an extra yardage and didn't take care of the ball. But the play that I thought was extremely important and kind of humorous at the same time, it brought back visions of Bubba Smith in my mind, was the interception that Stafford threw that bounced off Calvin's knee or whatever, went up in the air.
Right.
And there are two Bears right there, and quite frankly, if one of them catches it clean, they're probably in for a pick six going the other way. But they're both right together, and Bell tackles both of them because he's not sure which one has it. And it reminds me of the old Bubba Smith Miller Lite commercial where he said, you know, I just tackled the whole backfield and then threw him out until I found the guy with the ball.
Right, yeah, that definitely – that's something I think we did overlook. Thanks a lot, Kirk, for that because, yeah, even though – because I actually when the Lions started blowing out, just completely blowing out the Bears – I said, you know what? All right, let me go get something to eat. Went out, grabbed me something to eat. I came back and looked at the final score, and it was, a 7-point game to end it? 40-32 as the final. I'm sitting there like, whoa, what in the world happened here? And I go back and look at the highlights, and Kirk brought it up. I mean, you talk about the fumble and, you know, the interception and whatnot. Yeah, that definitely surprised me. I think that was a case where the Lions blinked. The Lions said, okay, we got the lead. We got a little complacent here. And, you know, next thing you know, the Bears are charging back. But, yeah, I definitely think that's warranted did you guys, even at the game, how was the atmosphere when that started? Did you guys start to say, oh, what's going on here? But well, I think at that point, I mean, they had no chance of coming back, though.
Right. The lead was so big. That pick was huge, though. And Kirk's right because, you know, we were driving, and I think that would have given us 37. And then he throws the strangest interception. Most people didn't know what happened. And then you look over, and two or three plays later, it's the sack fumble and fairly rumbles in for the touchdown. But without that tackle, yeah, it gets a lot tighter. And down the stretch, it just seemed like both teams kind of knew it was over, and then Chicago just kind of made a few plays. Detroit's playing prevent, and then they kind of get back in the game. And, you know, with like a minute 43 left, Chicago's just kind of like they're running hurry up, but it's not really hurrying. They're taking their time, and it was so strange to watch them because, you know, they were only down 16.
Yeah.
You knew if they were going to score, they're probably going to get the two-point conversion because
They scored
fade
twice
routes are so easy to score on these days.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Because they converted on two-point conversions of them. And that really surprised me when I look back at that. And I'm saying, well, I think that's a case where the Lions just kind of just relaxed. And
oh, yeah.
I'm saying,
they're in the clubhouse in the third quarter.
Right. That's the thing. The Lions aren't used to blowing out a team.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And when that was going on that Sunday, it was one of those things where the Lions were just like, okay, well, I guess we can relax. I think that's what happened. And next thing you know, all of a sudden the Bears are kind of, you know, threatening a little bit here. And, that definitely surprised me. But all in all, I thought it was a great, great game for the Detroit Lions. It does a lot for their confidence as they move on now. It does a lot nationally for them as people are looking at this team saying, okay, we got to come correct with the Lions because they are a team to be reckoned with. The Lions have not lost at home yet. They are now 2-0 at home, I believe. 3-1 overall in the battle with the Chicago Bears. So we'll see how this pans out. We'll definitely see how this pans out. And on our Facebook page, we also asked you all to weigh in and just give us your thoughts on this Lions team. And you still can give us a call here at the studio, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. And on our Current Sports Facebook page, we asked in two words, describe the best thing about the Detroit Lions game against the Bears. So a few of you guys have decided to weigh in. Luke, you say that Jay Cutler's interception. That's three words, but we'll accept it, Luke. We'll let that pass. So Jay Cutler's interception. Or you could have just said Jay's interceptions, but I feel you on that, brother. John Reggie Bush. Simple as that. Simple as that. Benjamin says beatdown. And Spencer says Reggie Bush. So, yeah, Reggie Bush is certainly the talk of the town, as deservingly so. I mean, he's certainly spectacular. I just hope that he can just stay healthy. That's the biggest thing with me.
Surprised no one said chest bump.
Yeah, I know, right? It was a funny moment. Yeah. Definitely a funny
moment. That was for me. Chest bump.
Yeah, but yeah, Reggie Bush is definitely, it's the only thing, because if Reggie stays healthy, man, sky's the limit. I haven't seen this much excitement about a running back, like you said, man, since Barry. And, it's great. It's great for this franchise.
It's great. It's great. And I'm thinking about it, and I'm enjoying it so far. But I come to realize that look at Reggie Bush's pass. The next game, he could be hurt.
Yeah,
and it's
I
scary
know.
To think
That's
about
what I'm
that.
Saying. Yeah, if he stay, he has to stay healthy. And right. Reggie Bush, he's been injury prone in the past.
It's like a Booby Miles. He's talking about where right. what Division I school he's going to go to, and then he busts his knee out the next game.
Right, exactly. Because if you look at the game before this, when Reggie sat out, when that injury happened, I'm sitting there like, oh my gosh, I hope it isn't too serious. He just had, and he's a back who is very versatile. He tries to elude, you know, certain defenders, but every once in a while he may get hit head on. And, you know, that's when those injuries come for Reggie. He's definitely had his problems in the past, and those definitely could recur. So if he stays healthy, Lions are golden. He has to stay healthy, though. So, again, give us your thoughts on the Lions. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Now, I also want to bring up some high school football. High school football, of course, on Friday night. A lot of action. Alex, you actually went out to the East Lansing and Holt game, which we'll get to in just a sec, which was one incredible game from what I heard. I actually went out to the Hazen DeWitt game, the rivalry, quote unquote. That rivalry I think is just dwindled down. But before we get to that, there's just some more of the notable scores around the area that happened on Friday night. Potterville beats Bath 26-13. Lansing Everett tops Lansing Eastern 17-6. Eastern really, really struggling this season. Waverly tops Grand Rapids 26-20. Charlotte tops Mason 37-16. Holt, as we just alluded to, Holt tops East Lansing 24-21. Field goal win in overtime. How about that? Ithaca, yeah, this train just keeps on rolling. 49-14 over Carlton. DeWitt over Hazlitt 35-7. DeWitt. And you talk about DeWitt and Hazlitt, who historically, this is a rivalry game that has definitely brought some memories to the town of Mid-Michigan over the years. But DeWitt has similarly owned Hazlitt over the years now. DeWitt, that's 11 straight wins for DeWitt over Hazlitt. 11 straight wins. I actually talked to the quarterback, Jake Jake Jacobs, I believe. Yeah, Jake Jacobs is his name. And Rob Zimmerman, the head coach of DeWitt. And here's what they had to say after that game.
It's a great tribute to our kids, you know, and we found a way to win the close games. And, you know, Hazlitt's played a lot of great games against us over the years, and we've been fortunate to be able to get it done. But certainly our kids have confidence playing against them. But we know we're going to get their best effort. I mean, their kids played their hearts out tonight. You know, we got some breaks in the second quarter and kind of turned the table on them right at the end of the first half, and I think that was a big momentum thing for us.
Well, when you look at these past few years and the success that you've had against this team, is the rivalry kind of dimming down a little bit, or is it still there?
You tell me, looking at this crowd, and how hard those Hazlitt kids played. Heck no, still a great rivalry. And, you know, next week we have St. John's, which we got to get to work on because that's a huge rival for us too. But I think ultimately Hazlitt probably still is our arch rival because it's been ongoing for so long.
Won 11 times in a row now, but it's Hazlitt. I mean, it's always going to be a big game. It's always a big rivalry. They hate us, and it's always just going to be a big game. We were totally relaxed. We knew that if it was 7-7, they were gonna come ready to play, and we just had to keep our cool and just play our game.
Now you guys are undefeated right now. What's been the recipe to success?
Just coach always gets us ready to go in practice. We always have a really tough week of practice. Coach never lets up at all and just pushes us really hard. And we have a really good team this year, both on and off the field.
Yeah, again, that was head coach Rob Zimmerman and quarterback for DeWitt, Jake Jacobs, as they top Hazlitt for the 11th time. Man, guys, 11 in a row for him over Hazlitt. I don't know. I got to ask you guys this and get your opinion on this. When does it stop becoming a rivalry? Because I would think after 11 in a row, I think the rivalry may have kind of gone out the window. I mean, just imagine if MSU beat Michigan 11 times in a row. Can you call it a rivalry still? I don't know.
Yeah, but another way to look at it is, I mean, and this is kind of a broad comparison, is Ohio State has been dominant over Michigan for the last decade. Is that still a rivalry? Of course, because that's got such a rooted past. Back earlier in the 70s or whatnot, Michigan was more dominant. But, I mean, that's debatably the most heated rivalry in the country, so a tough comparison. But, yeah, I think it's still there, yeah. I just think that although the last 11 times it's been different, you just got to look at the past history.
You have to go deep for that pass. That history kind of brings it on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got to go deep with the history, and it only takes one win for the other team for the trash talk to start up again for that rivalry to be renewed, I guess. Because, you know, once a team goes streaking, when that streak gets snapped, the opposing fan base know, you know, then they start saying, oh, well, the tides have turned, you know, things are changing, and we're going to start a streak of our own. And it just takes the one.
It just takes that one game.
The one win.
Yeah,
to kind of change people's perception of the rivalry. So
gotcha. Well, yeah. I mean, I went to that game, and I tell you what, the stands. And I've historically gone to, you know, DeWitt and Hazlitt games for the past 4 or 5 years now, and every single time I go, I mean, the stands are packed to the brim, standing room only. I mean, it's great. I mean, the atmosphere was certainly electric, even though it was. At one point, I mean, it was a 7-7 game in the beginning of the game before halftime, and then that's when DeWitt, after that, just started to roll. But yeah, the atmosphere was still there. I mean, the fans still look at it as a rivalry, and I think that's what keeps it, you know, the true essence of a rivalry going. I mean, how the fans approach it and, you know, the hate that you have for that other team, and I think it's still rich. It's still rich there. So, all right, well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to highlight the MSU volleyball team, a team that is certainly turning heads. My goodness, they're good. And we're definitely going to talk with one player who has been turning some heads for quite a long time, and she has accomplished one admirable accomplishment in the world of MSU volleyball. So stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. More current sports is coming right back.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, October brings the new Supreme Court term. On the docket this fall, there are cases involving abortion, campaign finance, affirmative action, and the separation of church and state. We will preview the term with Emily Bazelon, legal affairs editor for Slate. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's Here and Now, coming up at 2 p.m. welcome back to Current Sports. As always, I'm your host, Al Martin. Well, let's get into our first guest for today's show. The Michigan State volleyball team has improved to 13-1 overall and 2-0 in the Big Ten with a 3-0 victory over number 13 Ohio State on Sunday afternoon. Now, they also upset top-ranked Penn State on Friday evening in the Big Ten opener. The Spartans open 2-0 in the Big Ten play for just the fourth time in school history, and it's second time that MSU has accomplished that feat in two road contests. Now, and a big contributor that has really been huge for this Spartan team is senior Lauren Wozinski, who recently became the ninth player in Big Ten history to record 2,000 career kills, currently the active leader in Division I volleyball, also just the third in MSU to record 2,000 kills. It's my pleasure to welcome Lauren to Current Sports. How you doing, Lauren?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. First of all, congratulations. That is certainly one admirable accomplishment.
Thank you so much.
No problem. Now, you guys are off to a steaming start. Now, are you guys surprised at all about your performance thus far?
You know what? I am not surprised at all. We have a great group of girls, and we've been working really hard. I think other people are surprised, but we knew what we had, and we knew what we could accomplish this year.
Now, Lauren, how good can this team be?
It's scary. I don't even think we played our best game against Penn State, and that was kind of scary. I think we're just going to keep working in practice and keep improving and keep working.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us at Current Sports, again, I'm talking to Lauren Wozinski. She is the she is unbelievable. She is the ninth player in Big Ten history to record 2,000 career kills. Now, Lauren, looking at this season, compared it to last season, what improvements have you guys made that makes this year's team so good?
You know, we definitely brought in five new freshmen that two are currently playing that have just helped us so much and just made our team more balanced, and we just have a more balanced attack, and our defense has gotten better, and our offense and our setters are great, and I just think we're playing really well right now.
How big has Coach Kathy George been in your development as a player?
Tremendous. A lot of the things, she has just opened my game up tremendously, and I've learned a lot more shots, and I've gotten better defense and passing, and I think Kathy and all the other coaches have a lot to do with that.
Yeah, definitely. Now, Lauren, I want to go back in time for a minute. Back to that moment when you recorded 2,000 kills. That's certainly something special. What went through your head when you passed up 2,000 against Eastern?
To be honest, I wasn't even keeping track. I was definitely nervous because I knew I had to get 10 kills or something to get 2,000. But I was so focused on the game and winning that I didn't even know when people are tapping. They're like, "That was your 2,000th kill," and I was like, "It was." I had no idea. I was just so focused on winning, and so yeah, it was great.
Did it hit you afterwards at all?
Yeah, it was definitely exciting, and the support there from all the fans, the team, and the coaches, and my family was just amazing.
Now, I got to ask you, now have you taken that second spot in MSU kill history? You only trail recent MSU Hall of Fame inductee Jenna Roble, who had 2,296 kills to finish her career. Now, are you gunning for that record? Be honest with me now.
I wouldn't say I'm gunning for it, but I'm going to keep trying to get kills, obviously, because I want to win really bad. So if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But that's definitely, if I keep getting kills, that would hopefully a record I would like to break.
Gotcha. Now, Lauren, something else I want to bring up. Now, you guys are 2-0. Just the second time in school history that you guys have accomplished that feat on the road. Winning two on the road. What is it about going on the road so far where you guys kind of bring your A game?
You know, the road is just very hard to be on, to win on, because you're in their home gym, their home crowds, and they're comfortable there. And especially at Penn State, Ohio State weekend, that's one of the hardest weekends, I think, in the Big Ten to go play on the road. And we just have to focus on ourselves, and we just had to go in there and be bold, and you know, we had nothing to lose this weekend. You know, we're the lower ranked team so far in the polls, and you know, we just wanted to go out there and play our best game.
So you guys kind of have go out there and play with a chip on your shoulder, so to speak, huh?
Yeah, I mean, we're the underdogs, you know, and I think we proved this weekend that we are more of a team to look at than most people would think. So we're just really excited about that.
Do you guys like being the underdogs?
I mean, I think it's in a way it's nice because people don't expect it. You know, I think people, we throw them off a little bit. You know, they're looking at the other schools, and we come in there and we give them a tough match.
Right, without a doubt, without a doubt. I mean, you guys are certainly just rolling now. So what do you think right now, Lauren, is the ceiling for this team? Have you guys reached it? In your eyes, how good do you think can this team get?
I think we're just going to keep improving and keep growing. We all have still a lot to learn, and there's a lot of season left and a lot to play and a lot of practices left. So I think every day we're just going to go out there and try to get better. And, you know, we want to be at the top of the conference. We want to be at the top of the country and hopefully get ourselves to play some tournament time. And that's our goal, to be at a Final Four, you know. So we're just going to keep working every day, and hopefully that's what happens.
Lauren, who do you guys have coming up next, and how are you all preparing this week?
We play on Friday, we play Illinois at home, and then Saturday we play Northwestern at home. And, you know, we're going to go in this week, and once again, I always have been told you have 24 hours to celebrate your win. So now 24 hours over, and it's time to move on to the next one. So we're ready for Illinois, and we're going to prepare this weekend.
Right, without a doubt. And I believe in the beginning of the season, didn't you guys play one of the top programs in the nation? I believe it was Oregon or Oregon State?
Yes, we played Oregon and Oregon State previously. And Oregon was the ended second last year in the nation.
Right, exactly. And I tell you what, that was a win that certainly turned my head. And I wish you guys all the success in the future. There you have it. She recently became the ninth player in Big Ten history to record 2,000 career kills. Currently the active leader in Division I volleyball. Also just the third in MSU to record that many kills. Lauren, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
No problem. All right, well, let's take another quick break, and when we return to Current Sports, we are going to invite our second guest. Yes, we have a packed show for you all today. Don't go anywhere. She is the new play-by-play voice for the Chicago Sky, Big Ten Network, CBS Sports Network. She does it all. Lisa Byington will join me next. Stay tuned.
On the next Fresh Air, why type 2 diabetes, back pain, depression, some cancers, and other health problems may be the result of our bodies not evolving fast enough to keep up with the modern world. We talk with Harvard evolutionary biologist Daniel Lieberman. His new book is called The Story of the Human Body, Evolution, Health, and Disease. Join us.
That's Fresh Air, coming up at 3 o'clock. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Well, let's get to our second guest for today's show. She was a huge mentor of mine when I was in college interning at WLNS-TV6, where she was the weekend sports anchor. She does freelance work now with the Big Ten Network, with CBS Sports Network, and is the play-by-play voice for the Chicago Sky. Lisa Byington, how you doing, Lisa? Welcome to the show.
Al, look at you. You're all grown up.
Stop it, Lisa. Stop it, man. I'm blushing over here.
I remember the first time you went out with me at WLNS. We went to the Holt baseball game, and we saw a no-hitter. Now, should your listeners know that I had to explain to you what a no-hitter was because you weren't really a baseball guy?
Stop it. No, I did know. Stop it, Lisa. I did know what a no-hitter was, okay? Really? Did I ask that? No, you're lying, right?
I'm lying.
Okay, I was just checking.
For your sake, I'm lying. We'll just keep it at that.
Yeah, but I remember that. That was the very first time. The very first time that I went out. That was my very first internship, and the very first time I went out with Lisa to that whole game. That was certainly a memorable experience. And now look, man, I've grown up now, Lisa. Crazy.
You
right?
have. And from there, it was downhill because then I left and you had to learn from Fred.
I know, right? Uncle Freddie took over. And then I tell you what, you guys were certainly huge and got me where I am today. It's definitely a big thanks. Now, Lisa, let's go back in time real quick. When did you know that you wanted to become a sports reporter?
Probably not until junior year when I was at Northwestern, so when I was in college. I knew I wanted to be in the media at some point. It was probably a choice that came down to either being a coach or being in the media. And I saw all the abuse that coaches went through. My dad was a coach, and right. you know, I played basketball and soccer in college, so I kind of put that on the back burner and just decided maybe like sophomore, junior year that I made the decision that I wanted to go into the media because I still love sports and I wanted to be involved in some way.
Right, right. Now, I got to ask you, Lisa, because I actually had Audrey Dahlgren, of course, who was also an intern before I was an intern at over at Channel 6 and who's now at WLNS TV 6. I asked her, you know, about this because we really dove into when it comes to the stance of women and their stance in the world of broadcasting. Now, I want to ask you how difficult it is for a woman to get into this industry and what hurdles did you have to experience, if any, as a woman sports reporter?
You know, I think it's a good question, but I don't think it's the right question. Mm-hmm. I think that question, is it tough to get into the business? No, it's not. Not anymore. I mean, I think it was tougher in the 80s and in the 90s. But now you see women all over the place in sports, right. on ESPN, from all levels. I think the better question now is, you know, now that women are in the industry, how do they better create a reputation, or how do they not get pigeonholed into certain roles, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think people look twice now if they see a male on the sideline instead of a female as a sideline reporter. I think there are certain roles now in sports broadcasting that are associated to this is what a woman does. And I think now the challenge, now that women are in the business, I think now the challenge is for people and women to kind of expand those roles and sort of not be pigeonholed into certain things. You can only do this, you can only do that, you can only do this sport, you can only do that sport. So I think that's the bigger challenge now that we're in 2013.
And Lisa, how do you go about attacking that? Did it ever become discouraging for you to see females, you know, kind of hone to that role of, you know, maybe just being a sideline reporter or whatnot? I mean, how do you go about changing that?
Well, there have to be trailblazers out there, and I think that there are some people in play-by-play roles now, like a Beth Mowins, a Pam Ward, I think are, you know, expanding those kind of boundaries. They're even doing some football, getting into some male sports in that way. I think Doris Burke on the analyst side, mm-hmm. as a female, she has done some NBA games as an analyst. And so she has opened some doors. So what you need is you just need the right people at the right time to be given the right opportunity like those women have. And then, you know, suddenly they kind of pave the way for others to kind of follow in their footsteps.
Yeah, certainly great advice there. Now, Lisa, I want to dive into the WNBA. Now, a couple of weeks ago, don't kill me on this one, I did not know that the WNBA playoffs were going on until Brittany Griner hit that game winner over LA's Candace Parker. I think it's a shame that the WNBA doesn't get as much publicity as other sports, but it seems to be on the rise. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think this year is one of the more exciting years because they had one of the more exciting draft classes and what they call in women's basketball the 3-C, which was, as you mentioned, Brittany Griner and Skylar Diggins and Elena Deladon, who played in Chicago. And so I think there was a lot of excitement around those three, and it's only going to grow. I think the challenge right now for the WNBA is to kind of challenge the same kind of excitement that there might be for women's college basketball throughout the year, because right now it's not matched. Mm-hmm. You know, there's more publicity, there's more interest right now in the women's college game throughout the year, and a large part of that is because the WNBA only goes really for three seasons, and it's during the summer. So even your main target base, which are your high school basketball players, you know, they're out and they're traveling and they're playing AAU tournaments and that sort of thing. And they don't have them, you know, in front of their couches kind of like they do maybe in the winter months in January, February, March, like mm-hmm. the women's college season. So they need to kind of find a way to target that audience again and generate some interest, because a lot of these players, they come to America and they play in June, July, August, mm-hmm. and then they leave and they play the rest of the year overseas.
Oh,
so
do
the
they?
League is pretty much forgotten,
right?
You know, for basically 8 months out of the year. And that's the biggest challenge right now for the WNBA, is to create that interest all year long.
And I tell you what, Lisa, do you think that the timing of the playoffs is kind of off right now? Because, I mean, you got the NFL going on right now. The MLB is about to start up with the playoffs. I mean, there's a lot going on in the world of sports, and then you have the WNBA Finals. I mean, do you think the timing's a little off for that right now, or should they push it or reconsider it?
Yeah, I think that's one thing that could be considered, although, like I said, you know, when you go overseas, I think they're trying to marry the WNBA season with the overseas season. And so there's some challenges there. But if everybody could put their heads together and everyone can be friends and agree on, on some sort of situation, it's easier said than done. But, yeah, the ideal would be maybe to start the WNBA season, maybe not in June, but maybe you start it maybe, you know, late in May. And ideally you'd like to try and wrap it up by the end of August when, you know, like you mentioned, like interests are now shifting to football and in the baseball playoffs.
Right, exactly, exactly. All right, Lisa, so I got to ask you, how was your first year with the Chicago Sky, and how was it covering Deladon? What was your analysis of her as a player?
Well, she's fantastic. I mean, even before I went into it, and quite honestly, even before the Sky hired me, I was one of the crazy ones that said if I was in management at Phoenix, because Phoenix had the number one pick, I would have picked Elena Deladon over Brittany Griner.
Really?
Because... yeah, just, I mean, you know, Brittany is obviously a franchise-changing player as well. I think they both are. But what I like about Elena is just her versatility and that she can play basically positions 2 through 5 if she wants. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, she even played, like, she even called some plays, even played a little point. So I don't want to, you know,
get out of here,
her a little bit. they ran some plays for her this year from the point. I wouldn't make her my point guard on a full-time basis. But she's phenomenal, and the Chicago Sky had a historic year on all levels. Going into this year, they had never had a winning record. They had never made the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You know, suddenly they won the Eastern Conference. You know, they bowed out in the first round of the playoffs, but they just, I mean, they reached historic marks in terms of wins, in terms of winning percentage, in terms of all kinds of things, attendance records. Mm-hmm. And it has nothing to do with the new announced staff.
I was just about to say, you're good luck, Lisa. Come on, we went to a whole high school and got a no-hitter.
But I don't think it did. I think it had to do a little bit with the coaches and the players.
Gotcha, gotcha. Now, like you said, the Sky were eliminated in the first round. What happened in that series against Indiana? Wasn't it, I think it was a 2-0 elimination, right?
Yeah, it was a best of three.
Right.
And, you know, that's the million-dollar question for the Sky is, you know, when you go back to, like, the Bulls and the Pistons, mm-hmm. You know, the Bulls just can never get past the Pistons. Well, I kind of equate it to that in the fact that the Sky, the Chicago Sky, can never get past the Indiana Fever. And there's just something about matchups where they just never matched up well against Indiana. And even going into this year, their overall record, I mean, I think they had only beaten Indiana 3 or 4 times in their entire franchise history. So they only beat them once this year. I think they played them about 4 times. And, you know, I mean, the Indiana Fever just lost to Atlanta, which Chicago really kind of dominated this year. So it's all about matchups, and sometimes it's a little bit of mental hurdle trying to get over that team you just can't seem to find getting over the hump.
Well, I'll tell you what, the Chicago Sky are definitely on the up and up, to say the least. Lisa, what are you up to now?
Well, I just made a move to Chicago, so that has taken up a lot of my time the last few days.
Gotcha.
And so now I'm living in a high-rise.
In downtown Chicago, where you at?
Downtown Chicago, right by kind of the Chicago River.
Beautiful.
In the Lakeshore East area. I don't know how, you know, familiar people are with the neighborhoods. What I have learned, though, about moving to Chicago is that people are very opinionated about where you should live in Chicago. They're very...
really?
Yes, they love their neighborhoods. You should live in the tree-lined streets, or you should live downtown. You should, and it was very stressful. And so I just decided, hey, I have to figure it out on my own. Yeah. I'm going to live in a high-rise and see if I like it.
Well, I let me know how that goes, because I actually have a few of my frat brothers stay out there in Chicago, and Lisa, they absolutely love it. It's a gorgeous city. Gorgeous.
Awesome. And just with work stuff and everything, it kind of made sense for me to do. So if you're in the city, by all means, look me up and I'll take you to a baseball game and teach you what a no-hitter
is. You know, at least that did not happen, okay? I'm going back in my I remember that day. That was a great day, though. Now, before I let you go, one last thing now, because I always got to bring this up when I talk to you. That one-on-one game with Fred Heumann, because I remember as an intern, I went down the basement. I saw the trophy. And Fred still won't really give me the details about that game.
It's a sore subject for him. I always like to check to see if that trophy still sits in the sports office at WLNS, and I think it still does. But
what was the score? What was the score of that game?
You know, I forget if it was like 32-0 or 42-0.
Oh, my goodness.
The most important score is the nothing.
Right.
Because he did not score a point. And basically, it all started because he was talking trash and playing down, you know, my basketball skills and saying I can't make a three-point shot. And so
that's what he said. Yeah, I remember that.
So we had some witnesses, and And I was able to...
And Jack Ebling was one of those witnesses, right?
Jack Ebling was one of the witnesses, and Sherry Jones, one of the news anchors at WNS was a witness. And so, we had to challenge his skills a little bit. And I backed off of him. I actually gave him some free shots and free looks, and he couldn't knock him down.
And just shooting bricks left and right, huh? Well, he actually challenged me to a one-on-one game, and I'm still waiting on that game. But I'll let you know how that goes, Lisa.
I don't even think you need to practice.
Not at all. I could beat him with...
That's my scouting report on Fred.
Right. I told him I beat him with one arm. I told him I will play with one arm the entire game. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. But, all right, Lee, well, let me let you go. There you have it. She works with the Big Ten Network, CBS Sports Network, and is play-by-play voice for the Chicago Sky. Lisa, stay in touch. Thanks a lot.
All right, Al, I'm proud of you.
Thank you so much, Lisa. Before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Production assistants Alex Sharp, Matt Lucky, engineer Aaron Young, Peter Worf, our station manager here at WKAR. Thanks to Lauren Wazinski and Lisa Byington for joining me today. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. As always, take care, have a fantastic day, and be easy, people.